Welcome to another edition of MMA Rated Radio, brought to you as always by Crooked Jaw. For more, check them out at crookedjaw.net. And as we like to do from time to time, today we're catching up on some MMA storylines making news and have invited Ryan Harkness, aka Fight Linker, my fellow countryman, to help sort things out. What's going on, Ryan?
Not too much. You?
Not too much. It's great to be talking to another fellow Canadian. I don't have the opportunity to do so, as always. But, Canada, you were obviously in Montreal for UFC 83, your backyard. And I'm sure you share the same sentiments as I do, is how surreal it was to have the eyes of the MMA world on our little city. How did it feel with all the excitement and everything going down, having the big event in Montreal?
It was freaking awesome. And let me tell you, the best thing about it all was how well Montreal did. As far as everybody that came to town said that this, it was so ridiculously loud. Even for the first fight, they started the card early, and even for the first fight for the Jonathan Goulet, the place was like half empty because no one knew it was starting till late. But it actually started at 7:30. But it was so loud it hurt my ears at times. So it was amazing.
So you actually got to go to the event, right?
Yeah, exactly. I was doing the play-by-play for Fighters Only magazine. So I was a couple rows back. So it was a good view. It was a great view.
Because sometimes you mention on the site that people don't like you or people don't want to give you access. But this time you had full access, right? You were in the press conference. You were like right down there, right?
Basically, the way it works is that you're never going to get any access as a blogger, and especially when you're a blogger like us, where we talk shit about everybody. You're never going to get access about anything, but since we were working for Fighters Only, and basically that meant we didn't get to do anything for our own site. We just had to point everybody towards Fighters Only because, you sign a contract and it says you're only allowed to do work for the site that you're officially doing it. So we weren't allowed to really do anything for our own site that weekend, but, I don't really care. I paid the price to get the good seats, and I sold out my own website. It's all good.
All right. Well, leading up to the event, I told that you are never going to hear a crowd quite like the crowd in Montreal. You hear Canadians games, even when World Wrestling Entertainment comes, they're always above and beyond the loudest group of people. What was it like, if you can explain? Because I actually wasn't in the arena due to, unfortunately, the Jewish holidays. But what was it like being there when George St. Pierre came out and he first, entered through the door and everyone saw that he was coming out for the fight?
Well, what's funny is they started the music, and I think what happened was that everybody forgot that George St. Pierre was going to come out first, because they're all, like in our minds, he was still the champion. So when the music started up, everybody kind of, got a bit restless, and they were getting ready to boo because I think they thought it was going to be Matt Serra first. And then he came out, and everybody just went out of their minds. Like, they showed him on the screen and it was really loud, and then he came out of the tunnel and it was extra loud, and then when he stepped into the octagon, it was just like, literally, it was so loud that it hurt my feelings. And I know I should probably go to the dentist and have that looked at, but it was the vibrations and the bass. It was literally bonkers. I've been to a couple other UFC shows and it doesn't compare at all. Like, I was in Cincinnati for the Rich Franklin versus Anderson Silva, and the cheering was nothing like that. And that's maybe because everybody kind of knew they were watching a funeral, but
yeah,
it was amazing in Montreal.
It's weird because I actually was watching it online on Yahoo.com, and it didn't really sound that loud to me. I was actually disappointed, but I guess afterwards, maybe it was through the computer or whatever, because everyone has said that it was the loudest reaction or reception that they ever heard in UFC history.
Yeah, I watched the event afterward as well because basically after the show, I just felt like I was in a daze. Because maybe it was all the beer that I drank or everything like that, but I couldn't remember nearly anything about it, so I had to watch the show again. And what I think it was is I think they turned the crowd volume, because what they do is they usually, you're like the production guy, right, for Spike, so don't they have like mics and stuff like that, and they have actually like a volume thing that they record with, and they're like, okay, we're going to keep the volume at 8 because the crowd is quiet today, or next they're going to keep it at whatever,
right.
But I think they kept it at like 2.
Yeah.
Because it was so loud in the arena, you really couldn't tell from watching the broadcast.
All right. Well, after every UFC, everyone likes to see, where do we go from here? Where do things stand? And obviously, the big question is George St. Pierre. Can anyone beat him in that welterweight division? And obviously, no one thought Matt Serra had a chance in hell last year to defeat him, and it seems as though his next opponent's going to be John Fitch. For John Fitch or anyone else out there in the top 5 or top 10 in that UFC welterweight division, do you foresee anyone beating him in the next 2 to 3 years?
Well, George St. Pierre has a history of being beaten by people who shouldn't beat him. So, I mean, it's not like Anderson Silva where he's got this, or Chuck Liddell prior to the Quinton Jackson fight, where they both had this aura of invincibility where everybody was just like, nobody can beat this guy with GSP. You know, it's happened. You know, Matt Hughes beat him and Matt Serra beat him. So, you know, he needs to really build up. And I honestly think, I mean, I think everybody's a challenge. You're going to have to wait and see, because obviously GSP hasn't been able to rack anything up. He lost his belt on his first title defense, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, until he gets, when people are talking about, are you going to go up and fight Anderson Silva? It's like, he has not set up a convincing title run yet, you know? He's up equal now with Matt Serra, you know?
Right. What do you make of that whole Anderson Silva talk? Because it seems so premature for me. I mean, the guy, like you said, he won the title once, loses it, has to work his way back up, only beats, you know, he beats Serra and Hughes, which are the guys who we probably should have beat the first time around, and now everyone wants him to move up. It seems a little crazy, no?
Yeah, well, it's basically, you know, the whole Matt Serra thing just ended up being a speed bump. Just stopped and slowed everything and screwed everything up. But, I mean, in everybody's mind, they always knew that, you know, GSP was great and they liked him and stuff. But, you know, you got to look at the numbers and you got to look at the facts. Until George St. Pierre spends, like, 2 years beating up everybody. And I say the same thing for Anderson Silva. You know, he's talking about leaving to go box. I'm like, talk about premature. The guy still needs to beat like 3 or 4 people before he really sets up a good string where he's going to be considered best ever.
All right, and on the flip side, you have Matt Serra. Does anyone care at this point in a match between him and Matt Hughes? It seems as though that's where we're headed. Obviously, last year it was on everyone's mind because of the Ultimate Fighter, and he was the champion. But now, is there any interest in that?
I think so. I mean, I actually think, you know, I think it was very unfair what happened to Matt Serra. You know, he hurt his back, so, you know, they did what they had to do. But, you know, for his first title defense, coming back and fighting George St. Pierre in Montreal, and it's just, if he had at least gotten a chance to fight Hughes, then, you know, he could have been able to cement himself as something better. But now everybody's like, it was a fluke, Matt Serra sucks. You know, he got nothing out of that fight except relegated back to the bottom of the bin. Whereas if he'd fought Matt Hughes before, then, you know, I think actually he's a good fighter to fight Matt Hughes, and I think that's going to be a really competitive fight. So I was actually really excited for that, and I was kind of upset when they pulled it out, because I knew how GSP Hughes was going to go, but I didn't know how Hughes versus Serra was going to go. So it's definitely a fight I want to see.
Yeah, never seen a former champion, you know, a guy lose his belt and then fall so far down the rankings. I mean, you look at everyone's rankings now, and he's like 6th or 7th. Which I think is a little bit too low, but regardless, he's not getting the love, maybe because people think, you know, he just got the title through the Ultimate Fighter show and it was just a fluke. Two other questions about UFC 83 before we move on. The first, Rich Franklin, where does he go from here? If he even racks up 5 wins in a row, let's say, and Anderson Silva is still the champ, I still believe he doesn't deserve that title shot again. You lose twice. Same reason I don't believe Chuck Liddell deserves another shot at Quinton Jackson. So does he just keep doing his thing in middleweight, or maybe try to move up, go to 205? We know he's a big 185, and maybe try to create a new thing for himself over there.
That guy is so dumb. He just wants to stay a middleweight. And everybody's been asking him, and he keeps on saying, middleweight's my home, and I'm just going to float around. And it seems like he kind of wants to sit back and just wait for regular matches. He's not going to say no to anything. It's like Matt Hughes is sitting back, and he's not just going to fight anybody. He's only going to fight the fights that make sense. But Franklin, you know, the UFC is going to keep on bringing him out because he sells tickets, and he's going to keep on saying yes because he's just a nice guy. And so he's just going to end up bouncing around the middleweight division for a while. They're not going to bring in Hoist Gracie to fight him. They're not going to do anything else like they did for Hughes, because Hughes wouldn't, you know, agree to keep doing chumps. So I really have no idea what the heck he's up to. I mean, I can understand the idea of him not wanting to move to 205 because, you know, he's going to finish up his career getting trounced by bigger guys. But, you know, he used to fight at 205, and he seems miserable cutting down to 185. So to me, it just seems like a no-brainer.
So you don't think that if he would move to 205 that he could be a major player in that division?
Well, I just think it's a lot harder. He's an older guy, so it's going to be harder for him to pack on the pounds like he used to. So I just think he's going to be a bit smaller, and I think he's shown that he's got a little bit of a weakness for getting his butt kicked, you know?
Right.
He's going to do well against guys like Travis Luter, cuz they're not going to be punching him in the face and breaking his nose again, but I just don't know whether or not he can still compete up at light heavyweight against all of these guys that are basically just, you know, meat grinders.
All right, well, final topic on UFC 83, the Caleb Starnes controversy. He fought Nate Quarry, or if you want to call that a fight. Now he claims that he was injured. He got released. Lots of talk on the internet about his performance or lack thereof on Saturday night. You were there. What's your take on the whole Starnes situation? And do you think that he was unjustly released by the UFC?
No, I mean, going into the event, everybody knew the UFC was going to be looking at any excuse to cut a lot of the lower rung fighters. I feel bad for him because he literally did it to himself. But I mean, how bad can you feel for somebody that does it to themselves? Like, I mean, and to make it worse, he did not handle himself properly afterwards, and he did not handle himself properly in the press. It's like, I really just have to kind of like, you know, I kind of like Caleb because he's a Canadian, and like, and this is the weird thing about hanging out inside the arena and having press passes and doing all the press work is hang out with these guys. And my job is to talk shit about them, but it gets really hard when you meet them and they're nice guys. And I met him before the fight. He was a nice guy. And I'm like, man, it really sucks that I'm just going to have to crap on you for like he's an infamous now. It's going to be months before we drop this.
Well, I mean, do you think it's a natural for someone like Elite XC will probably try to pick him up due to the fact that he has all this buzz around him, right?
Yeah, I suppose. But the problem is, it's not like they're going to pick him up and grow him like they did with Kimbo Slice. It's going to be the same way the UFC would do to, say, Fedor. They're going to throw him in the deep end against some big guy because they know the money's not in having him fight for the organization. It's having him get his ass kicked and letting us watch that. And that's what they're going to do. They're going to set it up, and if he's foolish enough to sign, which I think he probably is. So I think we're going to see him go into the ring against some really big guy and really get hurt
and
find out how good he actually has in the UFC.
Sorry, do you believe that if he would have kept his mouth shut, if he would have like taken the whole situation like a pro, he wouldn't have been released, but maybe it was because he's so outspoken and vocal about, you know, the way the UFC treats the fighters and all these excuses that he made and the stuff that he said about Dana not wanting to cross the street for $10,000? Do you believe that that's the reason why he got released, or, you know, he could have said anything and his performance alone was the reason?
He was in such a corner from everything else. I mean, he's the guy that quit on the Ultimate Fighter. He quit during the Belcher fight, and it's like every single time he's involved in anything. And you know how he got Fight of the Night versus Chris Leben? I thought that was crap.
Right.
I thought he had a really bad fight. The only reason that did anything, he was pulling the same act, and Leben just managed to take him down, and they ended up on the ground. So I just think that's just the way that he normally does everything, and in the end he was just screwed because he has such a history of bad fights and then making excuses. And, you know, true, if the excuses are true or not, I have no idea, but it's like the perception was there to a point where he was just screwed before he opened his mouth, but he made it so much worse. He would have been released regardless. He just got the first volley out first, you know?
Yeah, okay, so let's switch gears now and talk about other big news making, you know, headlines in the MMA world. And to me, the biggest one has to be going down over in Japan. Just getting word yesterday through SureDog.com that Dream, the new promotion rising from the ashes of the former Pride Fighting Championships group, has now been pulled off of the Tokyo broadcasting system. That means, you know, they're not on TV anymore. They don't have that publicity. They're not getting that exposure, that coverage. And we all know with a lot of these other promotions out there, if you're not on TV, if you don't have that coverage, you're pretty much doomed for failure. What does this mean for Dream? And are you surprised that they were pulled so soon?
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre that they disappeared. So like just after one event, but I think it was because executives looked at the second card and they realized it was pretty much the same thing, and they didn't even have Pro Cop on it this time, you know? So there was really no saving grace other than Sakuraba, who they put up against a really soft opponent to have him fight in the tournament. And even now, I don't think I'm fighting in the tournament. So it's just a complete... The reason that it's failing so badly is because the cards are being put together so poorly. While you look at Sengoku, the other Japanese promotion, they're getting Kevin Randleman, Jeff Monson, Josh Barnett, Roger Gracie, all of these big white fighters that historically do really well over in Japan. They seem to be building the right kind of cards, while Dream seem to have forgotten that, you know, it was that whole pride thing of if not gigantic foreigners fighting, it was gigantic foreigner against small Japanese guy that worked. So they just their cards have been terrible. The last two cards, for hardcore people, they're good, but for for people like me, they're not that great. So it doesn't surprise me that they got dropped, considering how their cards just weren't seeming improvement. Was it quick? Yeah, it was quick, but maybe the fact that these guys are basically have the pride guys back, and maybe that has something to do with it.
Yeah, that was actually my next question. Do you think that the association with the former Pride guys, because we know that the troubles that they had behind the scenes, which led to them getting off of television in Japan, could that... It's weird, because you think, okay, maybe that was the reason, but then they were on TV to begin with, so something must have happened between now and then. The question that I want to ask you is, does this mean that they're done? I mean, what do they do? They're just going to put on shows and just, for a live audience and not be on television?
Well, the difference between Dream and Pride is that Dream has K1 backing it, and K1's still got decent amount of programming on television, and they've got some, decently deep pockets. They can keep rolling. And plus, they're not spending as much money as they used to, because all the big foreigners spent a lot of money are over in the other organization. Do I think it's because of the connection? I imagine that these guys over in Japan, you screw up and you reek of failure, and then you're like a leper and no one wants to touch you. So I think that's still there. And I think what's happened as well is that they're not getting their way with a lot of things they used to, because they demand stuff and people used to just do it because of the implicit connection. I don't even know if the connection is there anymore or if it's just so tenuous that it doesn't matter, but you got people like Sakuraba refusing to fight in the tournament, Aoki doing all sorts of goofy things. It's like no one cares anymore. They snap their fingers and no one jumps. So I think it's really giving them a hard time. They don't know how to do business without some muscle backing them up, and that's why they're suffering.
If we speak in a year from now, all these new Japanese promotions, how many of them will still be around? Do you think that there'll just be one that's sort of standing above the rest, or do you think we'll be sort of in the same situation as we are today?
Yeah, I think Dream will still be around. I think Sengoku will still be around, and obviously, like, the smaller promotions that just chug along, they'll still be there. So, I mean, I think everything's going to be treading water unless Sengoku really breaks out, which I think it could. I think lots of people seem to be really excited about it. It seems like it's got the fighters behind it, because they look at it. Sengoku was like the clean alternative to Dream. They started it up by saying this is going to be Pride's replacement, except we're doing everything on the board. We've got athletic commissions behind it and honorable people, and so it seems like they're really going about it the right way, which is basically kind of how Zuffa wanted to do it, but couldn't figure out how.
Right. All right, well, let's talk about the other big news, and that's UFC 85, everyone trying to figure out who is going to replace Chuck Liddell, what's going to be the new main event, and hopefully by the time I post this, I don't make you look bad and there's like something totally different that comes about. But what is your take on that situation? Do you think that someone out of the blue is going to come about? I spoke to Monty Cox. He said that one of his clients is being discussed. So I guess people can sort of figure that out for themselves. But what's your take on it? What do you think the new main event of UFC 85 will be?
Man, I don't know. They're kind of in a crappy situation. It's like maybe if Matt Hughes steps up, but then you got to find somebody worthwhile that's willing to step up and fight Matt Hughes. And I really can't think of anybody. I mean, maybe you could get Matt Hughes versus Carol Parisian, and that would be something that would be interesting, but would it really? It's not going to replace the Iceman. That's a fight that's kind of on par with what they had in, what the UK did in Ireland with Okami versus Franklin. It's interesting to a degree, but not really. So, I mean, at this point, they're pretty much screwed, unless, there were the rumors as well that they were going to try and put Nogueira versus Mir in the title, and at the very least, it's a belt. And that really saves you. As soon as you put a belt on the line, then all of a sudden you've got a saving grace. And if it's the heavyweight belt, then even better. So, I mean, if you ask me what's the best fight to make, it's to make the Mir versus Nogueira fight. Do I think that's going to happen? No, I don't. I don't think they're going to be able to pull anything out of the fire this time. I just think Matt Hughes isn't going to be willing to fight somebody really good on short notice because he hasn't been training at all, really.
Right.
So I really have no idea what the heck they're going to do. They've already replaced Chuck Liddell with with James Irvin to fight Rashad Evans, and that's a bust. Right. And they're talking about, have they announced Bisping versus Lieben yet?
Not officially, no.
But I mean, that's a good fight. But I mean, is that really gonna make up for the sting of Chuck? That's the thing. Chuck is such big shoes to fill. I have no idea what the hell they're gonna do.
The Mir Nogueira potential fight. We've also heard rumors that they will be the coaches in the next season of The Ultimate Fighter, which I find a very, very weird choice. Nogueira just. I don't picture him in that role of what Quentin Jackson, especially coming off of now Jackson and Griffin, that might potentially throw a snag into those plans, right?
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe they're going to do that because number one, just the idea of Spike agreeing to have a foreigner as one of the coaches, and then no one likes Frank Mir. Frank Mir is a jerk. He's an idiot. He's, you know, he comes off pretty. Okay on the WEC broadcast, but I mean as a person he would just be not enjoyable to watch. So I can't imagine that they would put those two guys in there.
Why is he an idiot though? I mean, what do you have against him?
He rubs me the wrong way, and I guess it doesn't matter because The Ultimate Fighter, they always hire people who just drive me insane, but I just can't imagine it. Who would tune in for that, you know? It's just Frank Mir is just this guy who's always shown flashes of greatness but hasn't done anything really amazing. So I just don't understand why they would put him on The Ultimate Fighter.
Okay.
But on the other hand, the executives at the UFC seem to love him. So I guess it could happen. I just think it's a terrible idea.
All right, final question before I let you go. We're almost a month out before Elite XC's debut on CBS. This is a two-parter, okay? The first is, are you excited for this? Are you excited for the card? And B, will this be one and done for them? Will they be able to pull out a decent rating to make it to show number two? Or are we all kidding ourselves about the worth of MMA on broadcast television?
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I mean, they set up the card in such a way that it's a guaranteed exciting night of fights. So I think they booked it really, really, really smartly. I don't think it represents, you know, really skillful MMA. It's basically a whole bunch of guys who are going to beat the hell out of each other. But I mean, you know, out of all of the fights, nearly all of them have that potential to be that Bonner versus Griffin fight that's going to change everything, you know? So I think it was very smart booking. And then on the other hand, it says it's going to be one and done. I've heard that they'd be happy with anything sitting around or above 3 million people. So that doesn't seem too unrealistic if the hype machine starts now.
Right. Yeah,
so
they really need to take it up a notch.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, just based on the fact that it's going to be on CBS, it's going to have a huge number of people just watching that channel at that time. Whether or not they keep it on or not when it starts is another question. But, I mean, you're going to have all of the fans watching it.
Right. All right,
so,
Ryan.
I mean, you're...
Go ahead. Final...
No, I'm pretty much done. It's
okay,
all good.
You're done. I was just going to say that I fear that this might be like an XFL situation where they start out big and go down. But on the flip side of that, the XFL did have, you know, WWE programming pushing it. So I'm a little nervous about this one, but I guess it remains to be seen. Ryan, as always, man, great, great talking with you. Thanks for dropping the knowledge. Fightlinker.com is the website. Of course, you want to hear people getting bashed and kind of like a humorous take and a lighter look at the world of mixed martial arts. One of the best sites around. Thanks a lot, my man, and keep doing what you're doing over there.
Catch you later, man.